We all have a fear of going to the doctor, whether we have a cognitive impairment or not.
You are listening to The Alzheimer's Podcast with Mike Good of Togetherness, your number one resource for practical tips and insights, empowering you and your family to live well with Alzheimer's. Welcome to episode 65 of The Alzheimer's Podcast, your number one source for practical tips and insights. I'm Mike Good of Togetherness. My goal is always to empower you and your family to maintain a positive experience, reduce and eliminate the need for medications, and make your time together with those you care for the best it can be. Doctor's visits. Who the heck looks forward to them? And when you think your loved one needs to go, this situation can, and usually does, turn into a mess. But with the right technique and maybe a little practice, you can turn this situation into a positive experience. And in this episode of Navigating Rough Terrain with the Dementia Sherpa, Christy Turner will share her expertise with you. Christy, I don't know anybody that wants to go to the doctor, let alone spend time there and get talked to and poked and prodded. So when a loved one has dementia, I'm sure it goes to a whole nother level of getting your loved one to the doctor. So today I'm looking forward to hearing tips and strategies from you on to help our care partners get their loved one to the doctor.
I'm looking forward to talking about it because I think I do have some really great strategies to offer, and you don't even need to have magic to do it. It just actually works.
That's wonderful. You might have to use your superpower a little bit, I assume, but
Always use your superpower.
Right. So now I want to just confirm, we're talking about people that are a little further along in the progression of the disease, or are we talking about people early on in the disease?
Funny thing about that, you can have problems no matter where somebody is in the disease process. The best I've been able to figure out is it seems that we all have a fear of going to the doctor, whether we have a cognitive impairment or not. But when we don't have a cognitive impairment, we're able to kind of just power through it. And once the dementia process starts and it starts affecting the frontal lobe where, I call it our self-editing feature, right? And so it creates disinhibition. I think then people start getting very upfront about the fact they don't want to go to the doctor. They're not interested. They're not having it. And so even somebody earlier on in the process can say, no, I don't need to. I'm fine. So that could be anosognosia, like we've talked about before, where their brain is telling them everything's okay. They don't have a problem. And of course, therefore, you wouldn't need to go to the doctor. And sometimes it's us with our approach and how we're approaching the whole thing. And I think a lot of times people just have had throughout their lives sort of a almost fatalistic approach to life. Not that they're trying to do anything dangerous to hasten their death, but kind of have that shrug their shoulders, whatever happens, c'est la vie attitude, that they're not going to go through a bunch of treatments or invasive stuff. And so then when they get to a later part in their life and we're talking about going to the doctor, they don't necessarily see a point to it.
Interesting.
Those are just my theories, of course.
Right. I know I've had that. I don't need to go to the doctor. I'll be okay. Whatever happens, happens. But I've outgrown that a little bit now. But now I have fear because as I'm getting older, seems like more things come up. So that's always a little stressful for myself as well. And I'm sure many of our care partners have experienced the same feelings.
Yeah, the wheels start blowing off the bus a little as we get older.
Right. So for the loved one with dementia, why are we trying to get them to the doctor in the first place?
That's always a great question. So I say start there. And with what I have managed to do, because I've been able to replicate this process hundreds of times, so I know that it actually works. But the big thing that we skip over, and of course it's not intentional, but we just don't think about it until there's typically something urgent that does require medical care, right? So the big thing to make it successful is the prep work that we put in before the appointment. And I always say the very first thing to ask is this necessary? Always the first question to ask, because, you know, if you're iffy about it, if you're just going, I think this is kind of serious, but I'm not really sure, if you're at that point, you need to seek medical attention immediately for your person and just kind of deal with the fallout. Because I don't want anyone talking themselves out of it, saying, well, maybe it's really not serious. Like, if there's something tickling the side of your brain telling you this could be a serious situation, you definitely need to seek medical attention immediately. But short of that, I'll give an example. Often, we'll get reminders in the mail or via email or voicemail saying, it's time for your annual exam. It's time for your mammogram. It's time for your colonoscopy, those types of things. And so when we're looking at, and those are diagnostic tests, right? So when we're looking at that, the first question to ask is this necessary? So for example, if your person is due for a mammogram, okay, if the mammogram comes back with a spot on it and they recommend redoing the mammogram, are you willing to do that? If there's a spot and they recommend a biopsy, are you willing to do that? If the biopsy doesn't come back the way you want, are you willing to do surgery or chemotherapy or radiation? And that's why I ask people to really think about, is this appointment necessary? Because with diagnostic appointments or preventative appointments, if we don't get the answer that we want, that we hope for, how far are we willing to go to treat the bad outcome? And, you know, for somebody who's living with dementia, chemotherapy is a lot. Radiation is a lot. Colonoscopy prep, actually having a mammogram, surgery, recovery, all of those types of things that we don't necessarily think about right at the beginning, because we've sort of been programmed now after all of these years that there are just certain routine screenings and diagnostics that you have done because it's time to have them done. It's always a good idea to kind of play it out all the way in your mind. What will this look like if it doesn't go the way we're hoping for?
I see. So in those examples, I don't personally know exactly what they all involve, and I don't know what all the potential outcomes can be. So is there a way for our care partners, since we want them to kind of visualize and understand those different paths, if you will, or outcomes, is there a way for them to get that information? Can they talk to their loved one's doctor ahead of time and so that they understand, or should they just go on Google and read? Or
yeah, they can absolutely reach out to the medical office to make sure that they understand what all is involved. Most care partners are of an age where they're going to have some basic familiarity with these things, but just going, you know, Googling colonoscopy prep or what is a mammogram like? Just really simple phrases like that are going to get you a lot of information. And WebMD is always a good resource for that because it does a pretty thorough breakdown of things. But I'll tell a story that I've been telling a little bit more recently, but for years never talked about publicly. And that is when I had a grandmother with Alzheimer's disease who got, it was time for a colonoscopy. And so my mom helped her with the prep. And that is, you know, anybody who's been through a colonoscopy or is familiar with that, I don't want to say brutal. I don't want to like scare people away from getting colonoscopies who should have them, but it's a lot to go through, the prep for that before the procedure. And so my mom was trying to help my grandma with that. And my grandma was at a point in the disease process where she didn't really understand a lot of things. And she was, you know, in retrospect, it's very easy to see that she was certainly too far along in the process for this to be a good idea. Not only because she didn't understand what was happening to her body, but also because she was at a point in the process where there was just no way, if it had come back bad, there was absolutely no way that, you know, there would have been chemotherapy or radiation or surgery or anything like that. And so what happened is, because she didn't have a great deal of awareness about what was happening in her body anymore, when she needed to go to the bathroom during that prep, she just kind of jumped up from her chair and did not make it to the bathroom. And so she not only had a massive accident, but she slipped in it.
No.
And broke her hip. And I mean, you want to talk about a bad situation going from bad to worse. The miracle in all of it is that she lived for 5 years after the hip fracture, which is exceedingly rare.
But I bet that those weren't very good. I mean, I bet those are tough times to get through, though, with all the rehab and stuff, right? So it took away a huge piece of the quality of life for her and her care partner.
Yeah, absolutely. And usually people only live, statistically speaking, you know, elderly people only live about 6 months, and that's a small percentage that make it to 6 months after that. So this is really why I encourage people to seriously think through what is the point of this test or procedure, and what will happen next? Kind of play it all the way out in your mind before going ahead and moving ahead with the appointment.
This is another one of those complicated situations where I'm picturing our care partners. It's so hard these days to get a medical professional to actually take the time you want them to take and listen to you and help you through. This is just another one of those situations where having someone like you on the team would be so beneficial. But I know it's not possible for everybody, but I just feel again for our care partners out there that are struggling in this kind of a situation.
Yeah, my heart always goes out to care partners, for sure. This particular topic that we're talking about, I happen to have written a very long article about it, walking people step through step of how to make, you know, the going to the doctor thing actually happen, and all of the little minefields to look out for and choices to make along the way. So I know we'll include that in the show notes, but you know, even if you're usually someone who just loves to listen to the podcast and not that interested in reading, I would really encourage folks to follow up with this article, because it is so in depth, far, far more in depth than we have time to go into during our podcast.
Okay. I look forward to publishing that and sharing that with everybody.
Yeah.
Christy, we've looked through this process of whether it's necessary to get our loved one to the doctor. We've made the decision that, yes, it is what we need to do. So what is the next step? Do we just tell them a couple days ahead of time so they can be prepared? Do we wait till as we're going out the door and we just magically show up to the doctor? What's your strategy here?
Well, again, this is where the more effort that we put in ahead of time, the better off we'll be, and something that often gets skipped because we're usually focused on literally like, oh, crap, how am I going to make this happen? And then we get super anxious, and we know that energy is contagious. And so our anxiety about how am I going to break this news, how am I actually going to make this happen, we spread that to our loved one, who then comes back at us with anxious energy, which makes us more anxious because now we're going, oh my gosh, I have to pull this off. Plus, she's so anxious today, I don't know why. And our person may not understand all of the minutiae of the situation, but definitely understands the anxiety, and then they get more anxious. So we don't want to get sucked into that ugly little circle. One of the best things that you can do to avoid that is to really do what I always tell you, right? Bring the good stuff, but you want to turn that loose on yourself first. So breathe in all the good stuff, the respect, kindness, love, compassion, empathy, direct it at yourself. Keep breathing it in. Remember, you can have as much of it as you want, and then share that with your person. Really focus on your energy. Use your superpower to get into that moment with your person. The only thing we want to focus on the day of the appointment is doing the next indicated thing. And by that, I mean, if let's say that your person lives with you. Okay, so what's the first thing we need to do? We need to make sure they're awake, and we need to set the tone for the day. So we want to set a happy, positive tone for the day, wake them up gently, not rush them through a morning routine. We want to be in every single moment with them, making sure they feel safe and secure and spreading the good stuff. Okay, they're awake. Great. What's next? Probably going to the bathroom. Okay, we got through that. What's next? Probably the morning grooming routine. Okay, what's next? How about putting on some clothes? And again, we break that down into as small steps as we need to. So it's not, you know, okay, well, we hurry, we got to get dressed. It's, we're going to put pants on and now socks and then shoes and tie them. And whatever the case may be, we're going to stay in that moment. And I know for people who really like to get things done and have a lot of things to get done, this can just hearing me describe the process is enough to jump up and down on their last nerve. But I promise you, this is actually the quickest, most effective way to make it happen as painlessly as possible. Staying in the moment and being very aware of your own energy and what you're bringing to the table. When you're able to do that, you're going to have a much better result.
All right. So we want to make sure we stay in the moment for that time, but we want to wake up. We know it's on our mind, but we need to check our energy and bring the good stuff. Keep our routine as consistent as possible through the day, and then we get to that point where it's time to go to the doctor. Then we turn that into an outing or a trip or something like that, I would assume.
Yeah, so everything's always going to be dependent on remember, you're the expert, right, on your loved one. So you're going to use that insider knowledge to come up with something really good. But again, sometimes just having somebody else who can help you with that is going to make it even easier. So, for example, I had a client who his family had begged him to go to the doctor for 3 years, and it just wasn't going to happen. No way, no how. And so they had just stopped, but they knew he needed to go to the doctor. And so that's why they got me involved. And you know what? It went like a breeze. So I think one thing was there had been a gap of time. That was helpful. The other thing was it was a stranger. And I mean, I had interacted with him several times before this, but I wasn't a family member. So there wasn't that weird dynamic that can sometimes happen where people sense that their kids are trying to get them to do something that they don't want to do, and they can become very resistive to that. But what we did was I used kind of insider info on him. He really loved to be a tour guide, and he was very outgoing and friendly. And so I had him give me directions out of his neighborhood, which he knew his neighborhood like the back of his hand at that point. And so he easily got me out of his neighborhood. He loved to go for a drive. So this was a real easy thing. And it was just always the next indicated thing. So, you know, he was pointing things out to me, and we were having a conversation during this drive. And then we, you know, pulled into this parking structure, and he's talking the whole time, and I'm keeping the conversation going. I was like, hey, let's get out and stretch our legs. And okay. And well, this is a nice courtyard. Let's walk across here. Oh, great. Look in there. I see a fish tank in there. Let's go look at the fish. We did. Boom. Somebody called him back, you know, so we went into the exam room, and the nurse came and did blood pressure, and he's like, well, this is a nice service. Yeah, it is, isn't it? Doctor came in, we left. And again, this was just like moment to moment. There was never any, he didn't have a bad reaction at all. And then when we left, we stopped and got a Cinnabon on the way back, which was like his favorite thing ever. And so when I walked back in the front door of his house with him, his wife was very anxious and like, how'd it go? And he said, oh, it was great. I know you don't like me to do it, but we stopped and got a Cinnabon.
Oh, it's wonderful.
You know, we went for a Cinnabon. And that was his whole experience for him.
A very positive.
That was what happened that day, was he got a Cinnabon.
Right.
Yeah, it was a great positive experience for
him. And never once, it sounds like, you even used the word doctor or medical.
Nope.
Or exam, or you stayed away from all those terms that could conjure up images or that emotion to cause him to want to go get away from that.
Exactly. And there was nothing in me that was anxious, because I had the confidence, obviously, that I was going to be successful. So that was really helpful. But not using those words, also very helpful. And I know that some people feel like, but isn't that being deceptive? Isn't that lying? And my true north is always, what is the kindest, most loving thing I can do in this moment? If I know that somebody gets anxious about the doctor or whatever the topic is, in what way is me talking about that or bringing that up or letting them know that that thing that makes them anxious is going to be happening, how is that the kindest, most loving thing I can do? And I've never figured out a way that that is. So instead, I do take it very moment by moment. This doesn't mean that it's always handled exactly the same way with every single client, because they're not all alike. So different things work with different people, but this broad structure will work with anyone.
What I'm thinking, Christy, is what a smooth experience you had. And obviously it's because you're the dementia Sherpa and you've done this for hundreds of families and you've been through this process. So I just want to remind our care partners out there who are thinking, oh my God, I can't do this. What the heck is she talking about? If you haven't, make sure you listen to some of the past episodes, because a lot of the techniques and strategies that she kind of just brushed over there, because we've talked in depth on it before, such as what is your superpower and going into the moment and just how to approach and work with your person. So make sure you listen to those episodes, and you will learn and those techniques that will help you be more successful.
Yeah, and the other thing I would say is, it's true that I have so much experience. Experience comes from past situations where things didn't work out great, right? And
right.
So then I got experience that let me know, hey, there's a better way to do this. And so that's one thing that I think it's always so important for people to know is, thanks to all of this experience that I have, I can tell you what doesn't work so that you can avoid that. Because even though we're talking about a process that typically lasts somewhere between 7 and 12 years, in the moment when you're trying to figure something out, trying to figure out what will work for your person, what will keep them safe, content, happy, make great quality of life for both of you, that is not when you feel like you have time to mess around with trial and error. But dead last time. So I know that you don't have time for that. That's why I just kind of cut to, hey, this is what works. And a lot of times I'll tell you, and here's some stuff I definitely want you to avoid, because I promise that will make the situation worse. So this is just another one of those examples where we wouldn't want to overshare information because it creates anxiety. And it also puts us in a position where We have essentially said, now that I've shared this information with you that makes you anxious, I am willing to have a conversation about this thing I told you, that the details of which you don't remember, this thing I told you that is making you really anxious, and any ways that you express your anxiety, I am willing to go all in on that and be the most patient, kind, loving person you've ever met between when this thing is happening and when I just shared this information. And so if you think about that, that is a massively huge commitment that most humans just can't pull off, right? I mean, that's a big deal. So just thinking about that really carefully can often help us narrow down when the right time to share information is.
Okay. Christy, in our last couple minutes here, I'd like to just ask, what about when your person is a little bit more aware and they know you're up to something, or you're trying to get them to go somewhere they don't want to go? Because I'm sure there's scenarios like that, right?
There are definitely times when people say, I absolutely don't want to go to the doctor. And so again, we're not talking about emergency or urgent situations, in which case you're going to do what you need to do and deal with the fallout later, but more when there's a room for a little bit of planning. So in those types of situations, I have dealt with it in a few different ways. One way, I've had clients with vascular dementia where we were able to have conversations about it. One thing to know is, don't think that one conversation is going to solve everything. Right? It's a series of conversations where I was able to just listen to what their concerns were and really validate how they were feeling. And okay, totally understand, get where you're coming from. And so let's make a deal. And sometimes that deal would be, if you don't like this provider, then we will find you a different provider. No problem. And you know, this is an important time to point out that just because somebody has dementia doesn't mean that they can't identify a provider that they think is a jerk. And it doesn't mean that they're wrong about that person being a jerk either. I've definitely witnessed those situations. Some people will feel like, okay, well, I'm supposed to go see this doctor, but he's an idiot because he's the one who said I have dementia and clearly I don't. Okay, great. Good news. I found you a completely different doctor. Let's go see the new doctor. Oh, okay, great. Let's do that. So again, it depends on kind of what the specific situation is. And sometimes, you know, it might get a little tense in the sense of, you understand the person doesn't want to go. You also understand that the potential consequences of not going are so severe that they do need to go. And so, you know, I've had clients where I was able to negotiate with them, right? So let's do this thing and then this other thing. And, you know, well, this fun thing before, this fun thing after. And then absolutely, we won't have to be there more than 15 minutes. Can we do that? And that has worked. So you can get creative in a lot of different ways. But again, you know, I could go in 100 different directions. It depends on your person, the insider knowledge you have, where they are in the process. Is the appointment necessary? What's the nature of it? What's going to happen? And a lot of times, really, the bedside manner of the provider is huge.
That's great information, Christy, as always. So I want to thank you again for bringing your experiences and your wisdom to the show. And I want to just really tell our listeners to make sure you check out the show notes and download Christy's, or read Christy's article and reach out to her if you have any questions. Thanks again, Christy.
Thank you.
All right. Bye now.
Bye.
This concludes our conversation with Christy Turner, the Dementia Sherpa, right here on the Alzheimer's Podcast, your number one source for practical tips and insights. Be sure to check out the show notes for any mentioned resources or links at togetherness.com/episode65. And don't forget, you can subscribe to the podcast there as well, so you don't miss any upcoming episodes, including next week when Christy and I will discuss how to have a great holiday experience. You've been listening to the Alzheimer's Podcast with Mike Good of Togetherness. For more information and to get the resources mentioned in this episode, visit togetherinthis.com/podcast.